There once was a man who was shipwrecked on an uninhabited desert island. There he lived alone for 10 years before finally being rescued by a passing aircraft. Before leaving the island, one of the rescuers asked if they could see where the man had lived during his time on the island. And so he brought the small group to a clearing where there were 3 buildings. Pointing to the first, he said, "This was my home. I built it when I moved here all those years ago." "Well, what about the building beside it?" said one of the rescuers. "Oh, that is where I would worship every week." "And that building beside that?" "Oh, don't bring that up. That's where I used to worship." In this morning's spoken meditation, we heard testimony from one longtime Unitarian Universalist that even the best, the healthiest, the most empowering communities are also messy, imperfect, and flawed. Underneath that insight is the truth that all communities are messy and imperfect because they're comprised of messy and imperfect human beings like all of us. I don't know if that's crushing news to anyone here this morning, but the trouble with demanding perfection from ourselves or others is that old adage that any community you're a part of, wherever you go, there you are. Now, certainly it is the case that some individuals and communities are more oppressive and more toxic than others, and we should seek out those that are healthier and seek to build healthier and more empowering systems in whatever communities we're a part of. But again, wherever we go, there we are, with all of our baggage in tow. And as the opening story reminds us, conflict and schism happen even when you're by yourself on an uninhabited desert island. Anne Lamott likes to joke, "My mind is like a bad neighborhood. I try not to go there alone." And whenever I take a step back and pause long enough to reflect and be honest, it's clear to me that I don't even know what it would mean to be a perfect person, living a perfect life and part of a perfect community. But I still get caught up fairly often in the perfection trap. Perfection without flaws or defects. Take one step back and you have to ask, perfect according to whom? One person's perception of flawless is another person's perception of a serious defect. To use only a few mundane examples, is perfection the still, majestic grandeur of a mountain? Or is it the shifting sand and crashing waves of an ocean view? Marriages have ended over less. Is perfection big or small, fast or slow, short term or long term? In almost any categories, one person's flawless is another's serious defect. There is no universal, unchanging standard of perfection, and that realization can actually be extraordinarily liberating. From the ancient insights of Buddha to the modern insights of quantum physics, we've increasingly come to see that there is no universal, permanent anything that could even be an unchanging standard of perfection. Reality is more of a verb than a noun. Everything is in process, moving, flowing, evolving. And as Buddha taught 2,500 years ago, when we demand unchanging perfection from a universe that is always already in the process of changing, we do nothing but create suffering, at least for ourselves and in all likelihood for everyone around us. As George Eliot wrote in her novel Middlemarch, "The mistakes that we male and female mortals make when we have our own way might fairly make us wonder why we are so fond of it." And there are likely many other wise insights in Middlemarch, which some critics have called the greatest English language novel ever written. But I wouldn't know because I've never been able to motivate myself to finish it, despite having started it on 3 separate occasions. Now, in my mind's eye of perfection, I'm the sort of person who, of course, has read Middlemarch. How many of you have read Middlemarch? All the way to the end. All right, quite a few. You're better people than I am. And I guess I am the sort of person who's read Middlemarch if you count reading the first third 3 times. But slogans such as carpe diem, seize the day, and what are you going to do with your one wild and precious life, those can sometimes be incredibly inspiring. But there are other times when those just do it slogans can also feel impossibly demanding to sustain, and sometimes, frankly, just exhausting. Sometimes instead of seizing the day, I need to just receive the day on the sofa in my pajamas. Can I get an amen? Yeah. In graduate school, that time which can be the height of idealized, theoretical images of what is possible in life, because way up there on the ivory tower, you can become so far removed from the reality of everyday life. During that time, I remember reading a self-help book written from the perspective of Ken Wilber's integral philosophy that I agree with a lot of. That book was called Integral Life Practice, a 21st century blueprint for physical health, emotional balance, mental clarity, and spiritual awakening. Those all sound like pretty good things, right? And part of the book's argument was that to fully actualize our potential and to become our best selves, what Oprah calls living your best life now, right? That you really need to always be working on at least those four areas listed in the book's subtitle. Physical fitness, emotional wellness, lifelong learning, and spiritual growth. There's not a lot to disagree with there. And I'm really drawn to that idea in theory and have tried to practice it in various, you know, more and less robust ways at different points. But what I've found in those years, you know, that decade and more since graduate school, is that constantly trying to work on all those areas of yourself simultaneously can be exhausting. And especially if you're really working on one of those areas, you may well have to let go of some of the rest. If you're really pushing the envelope in one area, training for a long run, seeking therapy for the first time or the first time in a long time, enrolling in a new degree program, committing to a meditation or yoga routine, experiencing a major transition or upheaval in your life, then maybe it's time to let yourself coast a little bit in some other areas. I've been reflecting on this dynamic a fair amount recently because this past week I finished as a participant in the UU Ministers Association's pilot program on ministerial wellness called Choose Health. And on one hand, I strongly agree with the need to take time off and to set aside time for meditation and exercise and family. On the other hand, I feel the pull of how much this congregation is accomplishing and the excitement that we've not even begun to reach the full potential of what we can do together. And I want to do more of that and to connect with more of you. The shadow side, of course, is that perfect image of what we might become as a congregation can also be deeply oppressive. We UUs have such inspirational goals for ourselves and for the world, but those same goals can inhibit us from resting so that we can really go the long haul, or from celebrating the small victories along the way. Consider our sixth principle, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. I couldn't agree more, but I also can't imagine that we're going to get there in my lifetime. I want excellence from myself. I want excellence for this congregation and for our world. I want, in the words of our Unitarian forebear, Henry David Thoreau, to live deliberately and not when I come to die to discover that I have not lived, to live deep and to suck out the marrow of life. I want that. I want that for me. I want that for us and for our world. But I'm also learning the liberation that can come from confessing my limitations and my imperfections. Peter Rollins likes to tell the story that we began with of that shipwrecked man who built three islands, you know, three buildings on an island, his home, his current place of worship, and his former place of worship that he got in a fight with. Rollins says that he's come to see that our human desire, our very human desire for certainty, for satisfaction, and for perfection, he's come to see that those are actually and can be addictions, that we can get addicted to wanting certainty, satisfaction, and perfection. And that's really problematic, that we need to name and break those addictions now that we know that reality is always already in the process of evolving, changing, and ripping that rug right out from under us. As Heraclitus said 3,000 years ago, you can't step in the same river twice. Time is always flowing. So Rawlins writes that we need to undercut any permanent hope for certainty, satisfaction, and perfection. And these are his words. You can't be fulfilled. You can't be made whole, and you can't find satisfaction. I know that's what all of you were hoping you'd hear this morning. You may experience them temporarily, but not permanently. And at first, this can sound like anything but good news. But once we are free from the oppression of that idol, we find that embracing and loving life, with all its difficulties, offers a much deeper and richer form of joy. Rawlins continues, "The individual who is able to loose themselves from the notion that there is some ultimate purpose, capital U, capital P, ultimate purpose to their life, frees themselves from the negative melancholy that comes from being unable to find that ultimate unchanging purpose, or the naive optimism that comes from thinking that you will. The secret," he writes, "is that there is no secret. There is only the opportunity to discover and deepen love. For love not only affirms the world, it produces a surplus of joyful affirmations that enact liberation." And what I hear Rawlins saying is that if we demand permanent, perfect satisfaction from our life, we will be disappointed, potentially robbing ourselves of the opportunity to savor and celebrate the gifts of the life that we already have here and now. In recent years, one of the people who has taught me the most about this area is the research psychologist, Dr. Brené Brown. Have any of you seen her TED Talk? It's really excellent. I encourage you to look it up. You can Google Brené Brown TED Talk and watch it. She studies fear, shame, and vulnerability, those things we all really want to talk about a lot, right? But she says, how do you deal with these things in a healthy way? And in her book, The Gifts of Imperfection, Let Go of Who You Think You're Supposed to Be, and Just Embrace Who You Are, she writes about collecting huge amounts of data about how human lives are shaped by the struggle with shame and the fear of not being enough, as well as the power of embracing imperfection and vulnerability. She then began analyzing all that data that she'd collected from the stories of actual human lives for the characteristics of people who have actually been resilient in the face of adversity and who were living wholehearted lives, living and loving with their whole hearts. Emerging out of that huge data set of actual human lives were some clear patterns. And she writes, "The do column was brimming with words like worthiness, rest, play, trust, faith, intuition, hope, authenticity, love, belonging, joy, gratitude, creativity. And the don't column was dripping with words like perfection, numbing, certainty, exhaustion, self-sufficiency, being cool, fitting in, judgment, and scarcity." Now, I don't know what your reaction is to those do and don't columns for living a wholehearted, resilient life, but Brown confesses that her initial reaction was horror. She says, "I thought I'd find that wholehearted, resilient people were just like me, working hard, following the rules, doing it until I got it right, always trying to know myself better, you know, getting a PhD, successfully publishing, raising my kids exactly by the book." But Brown was horrified by the revelation that as a successful professional, she had been formed and rewarded for living almost exclusively by the list of how not to live a wholehearted life, the list of how to reach the end of your life and have the greatest likelihood of having regrets. Perfection, numbing, certainty, exhaustion, self-sufficiency, being cool, fitting in, judgment, and scarcity. So she promptly packed up her research, put it in a Tupperware container, and put it under her bed for a year and a half. Because when you pause and take a step back, you can often see that daily life is a constant reminder of our imperfections and of our limitations, of forgetting your wallet, right? It's so simple. We do it all the time. We're constantly being invited to let go of who we're supposed to be and embrace who you are. But often we're like Brown and we shove those invitations under the rug as quickly as possible so we can maintain that false view of ourselves and who we hope other people think we are. In Brown's words, the universe is not short on wake-up calls, but we're really quick to hit the snooze button. As you use, our first principle affirms the inherent worth and dignity of every person. But often it can be easier for many of us to fight for the rights and the recognition of a marginalized group than to really fully and truly and authentically embrace the inherent worth and dignity of those hidden parts of our own self, those parts that we hope others don't see, all those imperfect parts that we hope others just don't notice. They probably actually do notice. As the old saying goes, too often we compare our insides to everyone else's outsides, and then we're shocked that we feel inadequate. We compare our insides to everyone else's outsides, and we're shocked that we feel inadequate. Brown writes, the greatest challenge for most of us is believing that we really are worthy right now, this minute. Not I'll be worthy when I lose 20 pounds if I can get pregnant or stay sober. Not I'll be worthy if everyone thinks I'm a good parent when I can make a living selling my art, if I can hold my marriage together, if I can just make partner, or when my parents finally approve, or when she or he calls back, or when I can do it all and look like I'm not even trying. On the other side of a lot of research and some important work in therapy during that year and a half when she had all that research hidden under her bed in a Tupperware container, Brown says that she's come to be a recovering perfectionist and an aspiring good enoughist. And that doesn't mean that we should stop pursuing excellence and improvement, but when you embrace your inherent worth and dignity, then your motivation changes in a vital way. Brown says that healthy striving is self-focused. How can I improve and be better for both myself and others? But perfectionism is other-focused. It's only worried about what others think. And what we think others think, that's what we really trip ourselves up with. Not actually what others think, but what we think others think. The middle way is perhaps neither the narcissism of exclusive self-interest or the self-deprecation of acting only for what we think others want, but instead knowing your limits and seeking always the next best step for both yourself and others. Yourself and others, both matter. Leonard Cohen, in the chorus of his song, Anthem, says that all of us can really do is ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering, because there's a crack in everything. But that's how the light gets in. That's how the light gets in. That crack in everything is how the light gets in. Where are the cracks and imperfections in your life? How might those places of seeming greatest weakness paradoxically be the most powerful invitations that you will ever get in this life? How might those be your wake-up calls from the universe to let go of who you think you're supposed to be and embrace who you are? To let go of our culture's addiction to certainty and the myth of permanent satisfaction and savor and celebrate the gifts of the life that you already have right here and now. I'll conclude by offering you this blessing in that spirit from one of my favorite liturgists, Jan Richardson. In this life, we all have our different struggles, our different gifts and graces. And may you have the vision to recognize the door that is yours. May you have the courage to open it and the wisdom to walk through. May it be so, and blessed be.